Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
From the Society for Nautical Research, in partnership with Lloyd's Register Foundation, I'm Sam Willis, and this is the Mariner's Mirror podcast, the world's number one podcast dedicated to all of maritime history. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Mariner's Mirror podcast. This week, we are exploring the quite brilliant history of mermaids and sirens. Folklore, myths, and legends relating to the sea have existed for as long as humans have been travelling by sea. The alien nature of the marine environment, the almost inconceivable scale of the oceans, the power of the sea and the extraordinary richness in the ocean's biodiversity has led to the creation and development of the most fabulous legends. And one of the most important of those legends concerns women and the sea, women in the form of mermaids and sirens, both subtly different creatures. The mermaid having the torso of a woman and the tail of a fish, a siren being a creature that first appears in Greek mythology, who lured sailors to shipwreck and death with their enchanting voices. Their appearance was different, and although written descriptions are few and far between, they are depicted in art as birds flying over the sea and ships, but with the heads of women. Now, you may not be surprised to hear that such a rich story is culturally rather complicated. And to find out more, Irwin Abolywotton spoke with Cecilia Rose, a PhD student at the University of Exeter, whose work focuses on mermaids and sirens as figures of indeterminate gender in the art and poetry of the late Victorian era, and how these figures may still be used as symbols for transgender and non-binary communities today. Here is Irwin.
Hello, my name is Irwin Abolywotton, and if you haven't already, go and check out the series I made on the maritime history of Wales. I'm from the Brecon Beacons, a really beautiful part of Wales which I recommend you visit. In this episode, I will be talking to a PhD candidate specialising in Victorian art depicting mermaids and sirens. For those of you who don't know the difference between a mermaid and a siren, a mermaid has the head and upper body of a human and the tail of a fish, whereas a siren tends to be more completely human, though at times with characteristics of birds such as wings. The Victorians, and the Pre-Raphaelites especially, were fascinated by mermaids and sirens, and it is particularly intriguing and relevant to us today how many of the Victorian depictions of mermaids and sirens are both female and male. These androgynous depictions were a big deal, because they defied expectations of women to be dainty and obedient, rather than threatening and dangerous. Myths about these interesting creatures can be traced back to ancient Greece, where stories about sirens seducing sailors and pulling them down to the depths of the ocean were used to scare sailors away from other people's territory. The Victorian interest in mermaids and sirens is also linked to anxiety about prostitutes and sexually transmitted diseases. Here to tell me all about this fascinating phenomenon is Cecilia Rose. Cecilia is in her first year of PhD study at the University of Exeter, and her project focuses on mermaids and sirens as figures of indeterminate gender in the art and literature of the late Victorian era. She is looking at how these mythological figures were presented as androgynous and may have been used as symbols for transgender and non-binary communities, both then and now. She previously studied a BA in English and an MA in Victorian literature, art and culture at Royal Holloway, University of London. Her eventual goal is to work in academia in the field of Victorian studies. Let's dive right in. Thank you so much for being here today, Cecilia.
Thank you for having me. It's really exciting to be here.
I'm so excited to learn more. So can you tell us a little bit more about the Pre-Raphaelites and the Victorians and what they were interested in terms of art?
Well, the Pre-Raphaelites was an artistic movement started by three men in 1848. And they basically wanted to take art back to medieval times. They didn't agree with the Royal Academy and the set rules that they had for teaching art. They wanted to use bright colours, they wanted to use literature as inspiration, religion as well. They wanted to tell a story with their works. So that's kind of what the Victorians were really interested in this period. They wanted art that told a story. And that's kind of where the mermaids and sirens come in. They became very interested in mythology, in folklore, all of those things. So, yeah.
Oh, that's really cool. So kind of looking back at almost like Greek mythology and other kind of classical stories.
Yeah, exactly.
So is that what you find particularly interesting about that period?
I just love the Victorian era in general. I did my master's in Victorian studies. So we did kind of a module on Victorian London and Jack the Ripper and all of that, kind of the gruesome side of it. But then we also did the Pre-Raphaelites and Dickens and Victorian literature. And I think it's such an amazing time in that it really shaped the world that we live in today. If you kind of go back further than that, you wouldn't really recognise life as it is now, but there's so much that the Victorians brought, the railways, the industrial revolution, all of this really came from them. So I feel like if I could have a TARDIS trip, I'd definitely go back to Victorian London and you'd see kind of things that were similar but different, and it would just be so exciting. You could meet Oscar Wilde, you could meet all of these amazing pioneering minds. Yeah, I love it.
Can you tell us a little bit more about your PhD that you're now doing and what led you to pursue that?
So basically, as I was saying, in my master's that was on Victorian studies, I really enjoyed the Pre-Raphaelite module that we did, and I got really interested in the artwork to do with the mermaids and sirens. And I was thinking, why are there so many mermaids and sirens in Victorian art? So that's kind of gave me a PhD idea. And I was talking to one of my professors at Royal Holloway, who said that it would be a really interesting project to kind of look at gender and androgyny in Pre-Raphaelite art. And I thought I could put that together with the mermaids and the sirens, and kind of thinking about the potential for mermaids and sirens to be a symbol for transgender and non-binary communities in that time period. Because there was kind of a lot of controversy over some of the paintings that weren't entirely kind of male or female, or were transgressing from fixed gender roles, because a lot of the mermaids and sirens are presented as dominant and aggressive, and the Victorians didn't like that because only men are supposed to be dominant. So that's what I became really interested in. So I wanted to kind of explore androgyny, mermaids and sirens in Victorian art and literature. I'm focusing on three artists, Pre-Raphaelite artists, Edward Burne-Jones, Evelyn de Morgan and John William Waterhouse, who all had a big focus on mermaids and sirens and inspired each other. And their lives are really fascinating as well. So they were kind of unconventional. They wanted to defy convention, definitely in terms of gender roles as well. So I'm kind of linking all of those things together.
Wow, that is really interesting to me, especially in terms of so many of the contemporary debates about trans rights and everything like that. I'm really interested, do you notice any real differences in the art created between men and women of mermaids?
Yes, so it is quite interesting. The artist that I'm particularly focusing on at the moment, Evelyn de Morgan, she was very into women's rights and the suffrage movement, and she kind of used mermaids as a symbol for female empowerment and the kind of sisterhood coming together. Whereas some of the men are kind of, they use mermaids to present women as a threat, and kind of they're a lot more sexualized in the men's pictures, for obvious reasons probably. But yeah, it is very interesting that women kind of use them as a tool, whereas sometimes men are using them to criticize women. So yeah.
I think it's so interesting to look back at, and I'm definitely not an expert in this area, but I feel there's a lot of literature kind of looking back to classical periods now, novels like Circe, where they're looking at kind of women in these myths, because women were quite often portrayed as monsters and are kind of demonised. But I think there are a lot of artists now looking back and kind of making that transgressive or empowering in a way.
Yeah, it's really great to see. I love also neo-Victorian texts that kind of are written in the Victorian times but are written now, because they have that contemporary lens on it, which I think is really fascinating, and how that varies from the literature written at the time.
So in terms of your PhD, is there any reason that you chose Exeter? Was there any particular maybe archives or expertise that drew you in?
So it was mostly because Exeter has the Centre of Victorian Studies. So they have a whole kind of group of researchers who are researching things to do with the Victorians. So they have lectures, they have a lot of Victorian library resources. Also my supervisors, that's kind of where the expertise was for my project. So one of my supervisors, Dr. Trisha Zakreski, she's in the English department. So she's looking at the literature side, very knowledgeable on Victorian literature, particularly women's writing. And my other supervisor is Dr. Joao Florencio, and he's an expert on gender and sexuality. So it's kind of the two come together really well and really nicely for my project.
I was interested as well, because Exeter's fairly near the coast, whether that like comes into play at all, whether you kind of look at mermaids in relation to ships and sailors in the Victorian era.
Yeah, definitely. It's really nice to be by the sea. I'm a Londoner, so just the countryside, the air, the space is just the dream for me.
It is lovely.
But I'm also looking at some Cornish folk tales as part of my project. So like the Mermaid of Zenna. And I might do some trips down there to kind of find out a bit more about that, because there's a lot of mermaid folklore that is based in the Devon Cornwall area, so it's a really good place to be.
Wow, that's fantastic. And in terms of carrying out that research, would that be kind of talking to local people or like museums?
So both. I'd want to I'm interested in the oral tradition and how that has changed over the centuries, so it'd be interesting to talk to some locals and see how the stories have developed over time. Also look into the museums, the archives. There's also a church in Zenna where there's a sculpted mermaid, which relates to the legend of the Mermaid of Zenna. So I'd like to go and see that as well.
It's so cool that you can go down there and speak to people who are kind of carrying like stories of generations. I think that's really fantastic.
Yeah.
So is there anything else in particular that you're working on at the moment in your research?
So I'm focusing on this triptych, which Evelyn de Morgan painted of the little, but it's based on the story of the Little Mermaid by Hans Christian Andersen. And she did three pictures to depict different parts of the story. So I'm going on some archive visits next week to look at some letters that she wrote about those paintings specifically, to kind of see what her inspiration was, what the ideas behind it were. And how it links to the feminist movement as well, because it was exhibited at the time when the suffrage movement was kind of reaching its peak. So it's very interesting.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I'm sure a lot of people kind of only know The Little Mermaid as a Disney story, which has obviously been kind of re-told. But how does that relate more to the original story?
Oh, it's very different. The original story is quite gruesome compared to the Disney film, as with a lot of fairy tales. But what happens is basically she doesn't get her prince. She comes out of the sea. She sells her voice and her tongue and her fishy tail to the witch so that she can become human and gain an immortal soul if she wins the love of the prince. But the prince marries someone else and never actually loves her. So she ends up dying, basically, gets washed up by the sea, but then her spirit ascends and she joins what are called the Daughters of the Mist, and they say to her, you have been so good and so loving that if you do good deeds for 300 years looking over the children of the earth, then you will be able to gain an immortal soul and ascend to heaven. So basically she gets stuck in purgatory for 300 years. At the end of the story, she doesn't get her prince. Her family are completely devastated and it's all pretty grim. But Evelyn's paintings, she's got one when she becomes human, one of her sisters coming up and trying to persuade her to kill the prince and return to the sea, and then one of the Daughters of the Mist and her ascending into that purgatory zone.
Wow, that is quite a sad story. I can see why Disney changed it.
Yeah.
But I can also see why feminist artists especially would be really interested in this story. Especially because I suppose in the Disney version anyway, she still gets married even though she's kind of had to give up her voice, which is obviously quite symbolic.
Yeah. It's the fact that I found the Disney version personally quite sexist and misogynistic, because she wins the prince just by how she looks. She can't speak to him. She can't display
any... Yeah, she can't even speak.
...personality. Whereas in the original, she can't... That's kind of the reason why she doesn't manage to save herself, because she can't present herself as she truly is.
So, yeah, moving back to some of the older artists, what kind of beliefs about mermaids were they working to either put into their paintings or defy in their paintings?
So it's actually really interesting. In the Victorian era, there was a lot of kind of interest surrounding the potential existence of mermaids, particularly with the revelation of Darwin's theory of evolution. People realised that we were kind of more related to animals than we'd originally thought. We actually were ourselves animals. So people became really interested in hybrid creatures, creatures that were both human and animal, such as mermaids, because they realised that wasn't an entire impossibility. And Darwin actually said that he thought that our ancestor was some kind of human-fish hybrid that originated in the sea. So people started to think that that might have been the mermaid. So there was also, with the success of freak shows, they kind of played on this interest in mermaids. And P.T. Burnham, I don't know if you've seen The Greatest Showman.
I have, yes.
He exhibited what he called a Fiji mermaid that was supposedly found on the coast of Fiji and was a real mermaid. He exhibited it in London in 1822. Crowds flocked. They were fascinated by it. They thought it was real. It toured the globe. What it actually turned out to be was the top half of a monkey sewn to the bottom half of a fish.
Oh my gosh.
So it's actually
oh my gosh,
pretty horrible.
Quite gruesome.
Yeah. But even after that was exposed as a fake, people still believed in mermaids and wanted to believe in them. But I think that the Pre-Raphaelites knew that really they didn't exist. And they just kind of used the image for their own advantage, for their own ends, to get across their own message. So I don't think that the paintings are particularly related to a potential existing mermaid. They're more looking at stories and legends.
Ah, and do the kind of way that they're depicted in these paintings, do they vary quite a lot, considering obviously that they're not based on a real life study?
Yes, they do. One of my favourites is called The Depths of the Sea by Edward Burne-Jones, and it's a mermaid dragging a mortal man down to the depths of the sea. He's either dead or asleep. You can't really tell, but basically he's pretty helpless. And the gender roles are completely reversed because he's very emasculated. He's weak. She's very strong, very muscly, powerful. And she's like smirking at the audience through the painting. And apparently she was based on one of Edward Burne-Jones's friends who they called the Siren because she was so bewitching and so beautiful. But she sadly died in childbirth. So the painting was like a tribute to her as a really powerful woman. And also looking at the myth of the sirens, how they used to drag men down to the bottom of the ocean and kill them. so it's kind of looking at the woman as a threat, a powerful threat. But yeah, there was a big merging of sirens and mermaids in the Victorian times. People didn't really know the difference anymore. The myths had got completely merged. So originally, sirens would kind of just look like women, or they would be in bird form. Those were the two forms of sirens you could have, whereas mermaids obviously had the fishy tail. But in Victorian paintings, you get sirens with fishy tails as well. So the siren and the mermaid got completely merged in this time, which is quite interesting as well.
Was a lot of the myth kind of fueled by sailors and fishermen? There's kind of an idea of them as quite superstitious, especially.
Yes. Well, what I find really interesting is I was looking like way back at the history when mermaids and sirens first came to be a legend. And that was kind of promoted by the ancient Greeks because they didn't want trespassers in their waters, basically, and they wanted to establish their empire by sea. So it really suited them to kind of instill a fear of the sea and be like, you know, if you come and invade us, or if you try and invade any other lands, then your sailors will get murdered by horrible sirens and mermaids. So yeah, they promoted these myths, and that's kind of how it all started. And then they just became more and more popular over time. So, and they kind of adapted with the times.
Wow, it's so interesting to me that they chose women to be the kind of like thing that scared away other ships. That's really cool. And I guess in the Victorian times as well, there was probably a lot of anxiety about female sexuality. Could you tell us a little more about that and how that feeds into the interest in mermaids and sirens?
Yes. So there was kind of a huge anxiety over women and their bodies. There was also the a lot of that was fueled by prostitution and sexually transmitted diseases that were kind of rife in the Victorian era. And there are a lot of parallels between sirens and prostitutes and the potential that sirens and mermaids were a symbol for prostitutes, that they would lure men in and then they would give them a fatal disease. So that link is pretty interesting. For my master's dissertation, I looked at prostitute suicide in the Victorian era and how a lot of women committed suicide because the what was then called venereal disease was just everywhere. And obviously the healthcare wasn't good, so it was a death sentence for them. So that might be where the kind of sirens pulling men in and killing them kind of came from, and particularly why it resurfaced in the Victorian times while all of this prostitution crisis was happening.
Just before we finish, I'd love to know if there's anything else you're thinking about working on potentially after your PhD, kind of where you might want to take this, if there's anything interesting coming up in this field of research.
I'd really love to eventually, the kind of goal is to become an academic working on some aspect of Victorian studies, hopefully teaching a Victorian studies course. But kind of in terms of research, I'd really like to look at something called the Golden Dawn, which a lot of these Pre-Raphaelite artists were part of. And that was a kind of secret society based on Ooh. Spiritualism, the occult, seances, interest in the paranormal that a lot of people were part of during this time. And I don't think much has been written on that. So I'd really like to write a book about the Golden Dawn. But first, I'll finish my PhD. yeah.
Of course, one step at a time. well, thank you so much for coming and talking to me today, Cecilia. This was really, really interesting. And I wish you the best of luck. I can't wait to see what comes out of it in the future.
Thank you. It's been lovely to talk to you.
Thank you so much for listening. That's it for today. If you enjoyed this episode as much as I did, go and find us on Instagram and YouTube. You can even see some of Cecilia's favourite paintings of Victorian mermaids and sirens on our website and our social media. If you would like to get even more involved, you can go and join the Society for Nautical Research, which does not cost a lot but is a huge support. You receive 4 copies a year of our Mariner's Mirror journal, which has been published for over a century, as well as access to all of the existing publications online. Most importantly, you become part of a community dedicated to preserving and celebrating our maritime history. As always, we love to hear from you, so please do get in touch with any questions, comments, or thoughts about our podcasts.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.